The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
And we made it to a Friday. Yay! I got an hour till my weekend begins. I need a song to cheer me up. I don't know about you, but here's Lauren Mayer. You can sing along, too, if you want.
With a pain in my head and a drink in my hand, trying my hardest to understand, I'm watching cable news all night long. This is insane. What a world. This is insane. It's like a horrible dream. As leaders act more uncouth. Now Rudy Giuliani wrote the next meme by saying that truth isn't truth. Huh? I thought that truth was true. I thought that truth was true. Isn't truth still true? Then we gotta vote blue. Is nothing true? I thought the truth was true. Start voting blue. Start voting blue. We gotta all vote blue. Is nothing true? Is nothing true?
I thought the truth was true too. We learn something new every day in this crazy, mixed-up world we live in. Her name is Lauren Mayer. The song, obviously a parody of the Spandau Ballet 80s hit, True. I thought that truth was true. Oh, I you know what? Let's do one more from Lauren Mayer, just because I have another one standing by, and it's Friday, and what the hell?
Donald Trump has been offensive ever since he's been around. So why are folks still shocked when his behavior breaks new ground? Stop wondering what his latest comments about a woman's face meant. Apparently rock bottom has a basement.
And we haven't hit it yet.
Starting with his birther crap or saying John McCain's no hero. Claiming immigrants are rapists or the tax he paid was zero. Or the greedy way he cashes in from tacky hotel placement. Still it seems rock bottom has a basement. Rock bottom has a basement, they keep lowering the bar. But Trump's enablers haven't given up on him thus far. The awful way that he shames women's looks keeps getting clearer. Of course, that gets us wondering, has Trump looked in a mirror? Just saying. Claiming he'd only grab women if they're skinnier and hotter. Plus the disgusting way he talked about his older daughter, who's a fake, complicit hypocrite. Trump's kids do what he taught them. Anyway, there's a basement to rock bottom. Rock bottom has a basement full of Trump's enormous lies. He rejects the Paris Treaty while insulting our allies. Republicans act outraged, and Trump's tweeting they deplore. But they'll ignore their scruples if he helps them screw the poor and women and immigrants and the environment and regulations that protect consumers, etc. Trump fawns all over Putin and ignores the Russian hacking, and officials who investigate him he tries to send packing. Though the GOP knows he's a racist, unhinged yeller, apparently rock bottom has a cellar. His side doesn't know the meaning of self-effacement, or what dignity disappearing without a trace meant. Trump's utter lack of grace doesn't matter to his base, because apparently rock bottom has a basement.
Ah, a twofer for this Friday from Lauren Mayer. She does such great stuff. She writes a new song a week, puts them up on YouTube, and they're all pretty much dissing Trump. So there's a theme there. Well, welcome to a Friday. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the East Coast, at NicoleSandler.com, of course. Through the magic of digital audio, we repeat this show at 6 p.m. Eastern on the Progressive Voices channel at ProgressiveVoices.com or on their app, which is free, that you can download from, you know, the Google Play Store and Apple Store or wherever, you know, the App Store, right? At Prog Voices is where they're at. Yeah, so those are the ways you can hear the show. You can always, always go to the website, NicoleSandler.com, any time of the day or night, and just go click on podcasts or click on Nicole's blog, and you can find any show you want to listen to. And listen, I don't have a paywall up. When I decided to do this show online, I realized there are so many people who are hurting. Now, I moved online exclusively the day Air America went off the air, and that was January 21st, 2010. So we're coming up on we're coming up on 8 years. My math really sucks. 9 years. 9 years? 8 years. Regardless, for too long I've been doing this, and I realize that a lot of people just, you know, are still hurting from the Bush recession, depression, whatever we want to call it. And I didn't want to make it so that you can't listen. So I decided to model this after the way public radio does it, you know, except I don't do the long, laborious pledge weeks where I beg you for money. I only do it really at the end of What's News, the pre-recorded one, and occasionally live, like I'll do it right now. This show is 100% listener supported. So if you enjoy the show and can afford it, you know, and can pitch in a couple of bucks, it certainly helps us out here. Just go to NicoleSandler.com/donate. There's all kinds of ways to give, however you can and however much you can. It's always greatly appreciated. We're in strange times. You know, the last couple of days have been fun because there's been some good news to share. Today, it's sort of a combination. We're watching Trump seem ever more nervous. Is that the right word? I think the walls are closing in on him a little bit, because yet another one of Trump's closest confidants, actually two since yesterday's show, have been granted immunity. In what they're calling the Michael Cohen case, but I think it goes much deeper than that. I'll tell you what, before I get into it, I may as well just launch into what's news, because these are all some of the news stories I have for you today. So let's do it.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, all is not happy in Trump land these days, one by one. One by one, the president's longtime friends and allies appear to be turning on him. The latest one comes today. It's Trump Organization Chief Financial Officer Alan Weisselberg. The Wall Street Journal reporting today that Weisselberg was granted immunity for providing information to federal prosecutors in their investigation into Michael Cohen. Now, just yesterday, we learned that David Pecker, oh, yes, perfect name for this man. David Pecker, one of Trump's longtime friends, the CEO of AMI, that's the company that publishes the National Enquirer, he struck an immunity deal with prosecutors investigating a $150,000 payment the president arranged to buy the rights to a story about a Playboy model who claims to have had an affair with Trump. You know the story. Uh-oh. Where are you?
Another Trump ally cooperating with investigators, and this one's gaining immunity for doing so. The Wall Street Journal reporting David Pecker, who runs the National Enquirer and is a longtime friend of Trump's, worked with federal prosecutors in the Michael Cohen investigation and discussed the deals the two men brokered to quash bad press about the president prior to the 2016 election. Details of Pecker's immunity deal coming out just hours after Trump complained to Fox News about people flipping.
Everything's wonderful, and then they get 10 years in jail, and they flip on whoever the next highest one is, or as high as you can go. It almost ought to be outlawed. It's not fair. If you say bad things about somebody, in other words, make up stories if you don't know, make up stories.
No, that's what you do.
Lies.
That's
Pecker
what you
was
do.
Subpoenaed by the feds in April shortly after the raid of Michael Cohen's home, office, and hotel room. And like Cohen, Pecker reportedly told investigators the president knew about payments made to two women who alleged affairs with Trump. Pecker and Cohen's alliance is laid out in great detail in documents from Tuesday's court proceedings. And Pecker's testimony to investigators is supported by documents and audio recordings seized from the raid, according to the Journal. Court papers show investigators found one conversation regarding the payout to porn star Stormy Daniels on an encrypted phone app. Pecker tells Cohen, quote, "We have to coordinate something on the matter Attorney One is calling you about, or it could look awfully bad for everyone." President Trump has denied knowing of the hush money payments at the time, but Cohen alleges that Trump knew about them, a claim supported by a secretly made audio tape provided to CNN by Cohen's attorney last month. On the recording, you can hear the president and Cohen talking about how to handle an arrangement with David Pecker.
"I need to open up a company for the transfer of all of that info regarding our friend David, you know, so that I'm going to do that right away. I've actually come up and I've spoken to Alan Weisselberg about how
Alan
to set
Weisselberg.
The whole thing up with
so what are we
funding. That, yes. And it's all the stuff. All the stuff. Because, you know, you never know where that company, you never know where he's going to be. Correct.
For now, it seems the only one taking the fall is Michael Cohen.
And hopefully his former boss. Coming soon. See, now we learn that there's a safe with lots of Trump dirt inside.
The Associated Press report that the National Enquirer kept a safe containing documents on hush money payments and other damaging stories it killed as part of its cozy relationship with Donald Trump leading up to the 2016 presidential election. Throughout the campaign, AMI would act as the de facto PR wing of the Trump campaign, promoting the candidate and savaging his opponents. That's Hillary Clinton. A lot of that stuffaging was done, too. Meanwhile, advisors to President Trump admitted to the New York Times that there was no strategy for countering news related to Michael Cohen's bombshell. Cohen's evolution, by the way, represented a rapid disintegration of a decade-long relationship between Michael Cohen and Donald Trump. According to reporting by Emily Jane Fox in Vanity Fair, Michael Cohen, quote, felt he was being hung out to dry by the president and those around him, that he was strapped for cash, that he was willing to do whatever it took to protect his family.
All right. Well, maybe they should send Geraldo Rivera in to open the safe. See what horrors lie inside. I don't know. That's out there, though. And I somehow have little doubt that eventually its contents will be leaked or released. Although Trump has been publicly dissing his Attorney General Jeff Sessions for many months now, yesterday Sessions finally hit back.
In an interview on Fox News, the president said that Sessions had simply never fully taken control of the Department of Justice, saying that Sessions never should have taken the job and criticizing Sessions for recusing himself from the Russia investigation. Now Sessions issuing this statement in response, saying, "I took control of the Department of Justice the day I was sworn in, which is why we have had unprecedented success at effectuating the president's agenda." Sessions going on to say, "While I am Attorney General, the actions of the Department of Justice will not be improperly influenced by political considerations. I demand the highest standards, and where they are not met, I take action. The Attorney General goes on to praise the men and women of law enforcement and to say, I'm proud to serve with them and proud of the work we have done in successfully advancing the rule of law. So a rare rebuke here from Jeff Sessions to the President of the United States, not something we're used to seeing out of Sessions, who historically has sort of taken the President's criticisms in stride, stayed very quiet about it, now responding directly toe-to-toe with the President of the United States on this issue of whether or not he should have been more aggressive in the Russia investigation. Sessions saying he's going to resist all political influence at the Department of Justice.
You know, not a big fan of Jeff Sessions over here, but good for him. It's about time that he fought back. Trump continued his childish, infantile ways by tweeting more insults at Jeff Sessions today. I don't follow Trump's tweets. I occasionally look at them, but I get bored very easily. Lindsey Graham told a group of reporters that it was very likely Trump would replace Sessions after the midterm elections. Oh, come on, people. Vote. Randolph County, Georgia, fired the consultant who recommended closing almost all of its polling places, which prompted accusations that he was trying to disenfranchise all the country's majority, the county's majority black population. That suggestion that they close 7 of the 9 polling places was rejected. So see what happens when you fight back against discriminatory ideas. Sometimes we win. The White House yesterday blocked, and sometimes you lose. The White House yesterday blocked the Secure Elections Act, a bill which would have significantly bolstered the nation's defenses against electoral interference. They couldn't even get it to the floor. The White House blocked it. Just let that sink in for a moment. Yeah. In an interview with Fox so-called News, Congressman Duncan Hunter, who was indicted on a series of counts ranging from conspiracy to campaign finance violations, blamed his wife for campaign spending and complained that it's difficult to live on his salary in San Diego.
$174,000 a year is what a member of Congress makes. Do you think they should make more? Do you think you should make more than that? Is it not enough to live on?
I think it depends where you live. I think it's difficult to live in places like San Francisco or San Diego or New York or D.C. It's probably easier to live in Kansas or Missouri. So it's all relative.
Sure. Depends what you
call
easy.
You also said yesterday that your wife handled a lot of the family expenses and the campaign finances. So are you saying that it's more her fault than your fault?
Well, I'm saying when I went to Iraq in 2003, the first time I gave her power of attorney, and she handled my finances throughout my entire military career, and that continued on when I got into Congress, because I'm gone 5 days a week, I'm home for two. So, and she was also the campaign manager. So, whatever she did on that, that'll be looked at too, I'm sure. But I didn't do it. I didn't spend any money illegally. I did not use campaign money, especially for Wounded Warrior stuff. There's no way.
That's what you call throwing the wife under the bus. I guess divorce papers come next. A new Reuters poll asked, would you support a policy of Medicare for all? 84.5% of Democrats and 51.9% of Republicans answered yes. We're on the right road. Former government intelligence contractor Reality Winner was sentenced to more than 5 years in federal prison for leaking a top secret report to a news outlet, The New York Times. She's the first person sentenced under the Espionage Act during the Trump administration, and her sentence is the longest ever imposed in federal court for unauthorized disclosure to the media. Just leaving a pause there for you to let that sink in. Donald Trump, you know, that guy, is spreading bogus conspiracy theories he hears on Fox so-called news. This time, it's a white supremacy, racist South African land grab conspiracy promoted by Tucker Carlson.
While evidently watching cable news, the president tweeted at one network, quote, I've asked Secretary of State Pompeo to closely study the South Africa land and farm seizures and expropriations and the large-scale killing of farmers. South African government is now seizing land from white farmers. South Africa is currently considering a plan to allow land seizures without compensation as a way to address old apartheid policies. And statistics show that violence against South African farmers is actually drastically decreasing. per the South African Mail and Guardian, this is all part of a racist conspiracy theory that has long been a rallying cry among white nationalists, and the roots of it can be traced back to an extremist far right-wing group who describes itself as preparing for a coming violent race revolution.
Lovely.
To prevent a, quote, white genocide.
Oh, God.
The group has reportedly met with far-right groups and media contacts in the U.S. in an effort to garner support. The South African government has responded to Trump's tweet, quote, South Africa totally rejects this narrow perception which only seeks to divide our nation and reminds us of our colonial past. So he divides our country, and now he's working on others.
Amazing. Amazing. And it keeps going. Donald Trump is spreading bogus conspiracy theories. Read that. Just yesterday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said he'd be traveling back to North Korea next week. Today, Trump asked him to cancel the trip, arguing on Twitter that the U.S. has not made sufficient progress on denuclearization talks. You think? He laid some of the blame on China, tweeting, I do not believe they are helping with the process of denuclearization as they once were. Yeah. Nothing happening there. And finally, John McCain's family released a statement saying that the senator will discontinue medical treatment for his aggressive brain cancer. Quote, the progress of disease and the inexorable advance of age render their verdict. With his unusual strength of will, he has now chosen to discontinue medical treatment. And that's the news for now. I see someone's on the line. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Joe. Can you hear me?
Hi, Joe. I hear you loud and clear. Where are you calling from?
Calling from Tucson, Arizona.
Ah, Tucson, Arizona.
You know what?
What?
Yes, I was going to say it's so nice to find you again. I just used to listen to you years ago, and I was looking for a friend, and I thought, golly, what is Nicole Sandler doing nowadays? So it's really nice to have you on the other side of this phone. And the first statistic I hear was your beautiful statistic on 85% approval for Medicare for All.
For Democrats, but still over 50%.
That
was Democrats. Over 51% for Republicans.
And which poll was that? Was it a Gallup?
Do I have it here? Or does it just say a recent poll? Let me see.
It's okay. While you're looking for
it's
that.
It's a Reuters
the one that
poll. It's from Reuters.
Oh, I'm sorry. One more time?
From Reuters. News agency.
Reuters.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, they're pretty credible.
So what do you think about the Fox and Friends mind-blowing statistic of 73% giving approval to Medicare for All? And that was off of 31,000 callers calling
wow.
in, swimming against the propaganda of Fox News. And at a time, like they're just telling you, look, we know it, we fell for the Obama as a socialist and all mm-hmm. that mind-numb propaganda. It's hard for them to call into a show like that and admit how they didn't get it. So it's a stunning revelation. And it's, you know, we always jump into the Republican car and we, you know, just Democrats need to learn how to stand. Because mm-hmm. for the fact that we could miss that type of demographic and shifting demographic and rapidly shifting demographic, and to blow the call on that. This weekend, we've got an DNC meeting, you know?
Yeah.
I wish I had an ear in that room.
Oh, so and do just, I. And they're gonna decide the fate of the superdelegates, allegedly.
Right. And there has to be a few other conversations
yep.
that they're going to have.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know how we can sit around on this information when we're, you know what I mean? That's why I'm just so suspect about Democratic leadership and no platform, no big idea, nothing to really offer. You know, it's really it's a stunning position to be in the face of Donald Trump.
There's not no platform, and I think again you got to go to individual candidates. Mm-hmm. The party as a whole has its problems. We discuss them all the time. But, you know, we're seeing some really great candidates winning their primaries. I know you in Arizona, you have your primary this coming Tuesday as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, you know, this is the time when we can go for the best ones out there. And in the cases where the best Democrat, look, you've got a terrible situation there with Kristen Sinema, who is no progressive. Yeah. She's barely a Democrat,
yeah.
But she'd be better than the Republican they're putting up. And this is the time when we have to have faith in the new people that are being elected, that will be elected on November 6th, to work their way up in the party and get rid of the old school gang who are doing such shitty work, frankly, and take over the party.
Yeah. I just, I understand your patience. It's just that I don't think anybody else has patience, in the incrementalism. I think that, we are kind of not, you can't have President Trump and to come with milquetoast initiatives and not have a collective vision as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic training camp to me, it'd be like a room at a crisis counselor. They sit in a circle, and I don't think they scheme offensive plans. I think they're still crying. And Omarosa had some bad words attached to her name, and fainting spell, and then Russia, and then fainting spell, and then, it's just at the end of the day, Donald Trump is president, and I can't believe it. There's a system out there that brought that guy to prominence. And that's the thing that needs attacking. You could slap a Republican. A Republican could have his head run over by a bus. And if he somehow lived through it and he could say words out of his flat head, he would say, what do you believe as a Republican? I believe in no regulations, no taxes. I believe in just the entrepreneurial spirit. I believe in, they could run through a whole list of things.
Right?
Democrats
and,
can't think of one thing.
Well, that's not true. That's so not true, because a lot of them say Medicare for all, tuition-free college, $15 an hour minimum wage. I mean, there's plenty of them.
Put it on a platform.
Yeah.
I mean, a meaningful one, not just a, I hear it's the difference between a message and substance.
Right.
Because right now at the DNC, they're pushing all messaging, no substance.
Right.
And at the end of the day in 2016, after we saw the hostile takeover of the DNC, where Hillary Clinton did a Mitt Romney-style leverage buyout of the DNC and took it back to New York.
Right.
So, this is what we're dealing with.
So what's your
solution? Nobody's reaching across the... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
What's your solution?
Oh, my solution is for an honest assessment of what's going on. It's, we need to acknowledge that we don't have an offensive playbook, that there is nothing. We spend all of our time batting down Trump. He takes it hard to the hoop.
Yeah.
We're just like, we stand there like just dorks,
Well, again, I think you're overgeneralizing. There are a lot of really good Democratic candidates. There are a lot of really shitty ones, too. Ideally, we get more good ones in there and we get rid of the shitty ones and we rebuild the party. Right now, that's our only option to beat Trump, because going third party isn't going to do the trick. It's just going to dilute the number of people who vote for Democrats and give us four more years of Trump and his cronies. You got to have some faith in the new candidates that are coming up that are winning. Alexandria Cortez, Ocasio Cortez. There are some really good ones out there. But Beto O'Rourke, who could beat Ted Cruz in Texas. I mean, instead of focusing on the negative, how about you promote the really good ones and say we need more like that?
No, I understand that, but there has to be some sort of reckoning of 1,000 lost Democratic seats.
Yep.
And, to sit there and keep pushing the same thing that didn't work, to the tune of where Donald Trump right now, we are not providing an adequate defense to that maniac, because we're not. Bernie Sanders won 47% of the Democratic vote, 22 states, and yet we can't figure out some sort of platform that is going to prevent third-party people that are really looking for solutions that are being scapegoated as a reason why we've got Donald Trump.
Yeah, well,
That's fake news right there.
We need a change in leadership, and that happens by electing more, better, progressive Democrats and having them work their way up. That's how it works. I mean, look,
which came first? Remember the Democratic wave of 2008? And then we saw I voted for Barack Obama twice.
Yeah.
And I got Mitt Romney's health care.
Yeah.
And let me tell you what, that was the inception of the massive losses that we would usher in as Democrats. But yet we're just like, nope, got to go for incrementalism. No, people are not in. They don't have incrementalism.
Then what do you do? What are you going to do? I got a minute left.
Don't
for
do
you.
The same thing. Don't do the same thing.
So vote I'll for Trump. You so you vote for Trump?
I'm sorry. I would have to say that we've really backed ourselves into a corner. Do we keep doing the same thing if it never worked? Is it, you know, you don't see anybody like we're making this about when we don't say that we show me your budget and I'll show you what we care about. That's what Joe Biden said. OK, and we're going to be having money that's going to be allotted, you know, in this next congressional budget. How would we deal with that money as Democrats? And that's what we've got to be creative with.
Have you read any of the stuff that Elizabeth Warren put out in the last couple of days?
I love it. I love
okay,
it.
Okay, so
bringing it.
That's what you need to talk about. Instead of focusing on how shitty the Democrats are, realize that there are some really good ones proposing a lot of excellent ideas. Elizabeth Warren's anti-corruption platform is a huge one. We need to get Elizabeth Warren into a leadership position and get rid of Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi.
You
don't do that by drowning the whole party.
No, but you know what? You don't cover it up by praying to a fake god. Keep praying to it, that fake god is going to fix everything.
Who's doing
Kristen
that?
Kristen Sinema right here in Arizona.
Yeah, she's
Kristen
horrible.
Kristen Sinema right here in Arizona is so conservative. You said she's a Republican. She is voting against Chuck Schumer.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Schumer handpicked her to run for that seat.
So if we don't talk about the lunacy to where she, what, Chuck Schumer is some flaming liberal? He's a Wall Street representative.
Of course.
That's his
backyard.
And she's faking the issue out.
Okay. All right, Joe, I got to run. I appreciate your call.
Hey, thanks for the time, Nicole. Thank you.
Okay, just do me a favor. Instead of spending all your time putting down the Democrats, find the good ones and talk about what good work they're doing and how we need more like them. That's how you help us.
Yeah, but also
doing
I'll
this shit doesn't help.
I'll ask you to acknowledge that the offensive training grounds for training to beat Republicans looks like a fat center. And it doesn't look like there's anybody who really wants to roll up their sleeves and beat Republicans.
But that's not true.
How to become a Republican.
That's not true. You're using these generalizations. There's nobody willing to do that. Bullshit.
Net neutrality. What were you waiting for on net neutrality? What were you waiting for?
The Republicans control everything.
What were you waiting for in Medicare for all?
Thank you for calling. Bye. You know, this is what I get when people don't want to listen. This guy, and I'm with him. I sympathize. I hear it. The leadership in the Democratic Party sucks. But there are some bright lights who are now getting in, who are in, who may not have the power. Those are the people we need to elevate. But if all you're going to do is bitch and moan about how bad Chuck Schumer is and Nancy Pelosi is and throw the whole party down the drain with them, then we're really fucked. Instead, spend some time talking up the good ones, helping those really good ones get elected. Phone bank for Beto O'Rourke, for Dana Steele in Texas, for all the Blue America candidates who are running, who can change things in a big way. Ted Lieu, who actually is in leadership in the House, help him move up the ladder. You know, congratulate and thank the people who are doing the good work instead of spending all your time tearing down the bad ones. Yeah, there are some really shitty Democrats. Just guess what? Joe Crowley won't be back in Congress. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez will take his place. And if we keep finding those really good candidates and actually voting for them, we can change the face of the Democratic Party. But if all you want to do is bitch and moan about how bad they are, take it somewhere else, because I frankly don't want to hear it. This is not the time for that. I've bitched and moaned about the Democratic Party for years. Now we're seeing some good people being elected. We need to help them as much as we can, because the answer is not do something different like electing a schmuck like Donald Trump. That's not the answer in any way, shape or form. Electing someone who has no business being in government, who's turning the country into a complete laughingstock, that's not going to help us. There are a lot of good candidates and people who are already in Congress, and a lot of good candidates who will be elected on November 6th who can change things. Rather than, again, waste your time talking about how shitty the Democrats are, how about talk about how good these new crop of congressmen are, and how they're going to change things, and how under their leadership we'll get out from under Trump and his cronies. But if you keep just bad-mouthing the Democrats, what's going to happen is you're going to influence some young, impressionable people who are afraid, who either won't vote or they'll think they should vote for some other asshole who has no business being in government, who's never done a day of public service in their lives, who's never served their country, who's just a narcissistic megalomaniac. And that's what we have in the White House right now. Okay, enough of my high horse for today. I want to talk about women. Because, because I just lost what Sunday is Women's Equality Day. So it's time for a little history lesson from a historian.
It's time for Amy Simon of She's History, the most dangerous women in America, then and now.
God,
okay, just before I bring on Amy, I guess Joe, our caller, just posted in the chat room, Nicole doesn't want to hear the truth, another corporate damn apologist. Fuck you. You didn't hear a word I said. You just wanted to hear yourself talk. Oh, well, that's the way it goes. And that's why we lose elections. Because instead of listening to how we can change things and make it better, all you want to do is dwell on what's wrong. We got to talk about what's wrong. We got to talk about how to fix it. And there are people who can fix it, and you just want to ignore them. So, okay, I'm done with that. Hi, Amy Simon.
You're never done with that. Hi, doll.
Well, he just pushed my buttons. You know, every time I tried to bring up somebody who's doing great work, he goes back to, how shitty the Democrats are. Look, this party was run horribly for years and years and years. And sorry, the reason we lost 1,000 seats during Obama's term is because Obama was a shitty leader. But that's not what we're here to talk about now.
No, it is not.
No. So, Amy Simon, cultural historian, Sunday is Women's Equality Day. Women are equal to men?
Sunday is Women's Equality Day, and Women's Equality Day is the day we celebrate the day that we won the right to vote. And no, we're not equal yet. However, that is a big day and a wonderful opportunity to celebrate and honor the women and men who made the day possible, because it did take women and men. And I always talk about, my play, She's History, about women who make and made history. And the strides that we made were made possible because a lot of men helped us, and there were a lot of women in our history that did not want and still do not want women to have equality. So it's always an interesting discussion. But the important point is that we didn't get the right to vote. We won it. We fought. We blood, sweat, and tears. Women went on hunger strikes. They were dragged around. They were jailed and tortured. And, we went through hell to win the right to vote. And this Sunday, She Is History, the all-female full-cast version of my play based on the solo play. This is my fourth reiteration of trying to figure out how to turn the solo play into an accessible full-cast play for theaters and schools to be able to perform so that the stories of the women get out there. That is my goal.
And it's a great goal. I mean, I know you've been working on this for a long time and honing it and tightening it
I never really considered myself a playwright. I've been an actor my entire life, and I've done a lot of improv and sketch, which actually makes a person a writer. But it was motherhood that inspired my playwriting career. Right. For your listeners who aren't familiar, my first play is Cheerios in My Underwear, which is a play about motherhood, inspired by traveling with my children on an airplane when they were little. And when I got off the plane, I had Cheerios literally falling out of my underwear. So I
We've all been there.
You know, you lose your mind if you don't have a sense of humor. But when I started to work on Cheerios in my underwear, I went into the library and started doing research on motherhood. And that really began the journey, which led me to She's History, which I've been doing since 2007, actually.
Wow.
I started to write this play because it was the recession. I had gone through a terrible divorce. I couldn't get a job. My husband had left the country, and I was in hell. And I went back to the library to figure out how to find some justice in the family court, which is a very dysfunctional place.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, I found Victoria Woodhull, the first woman to run for president in 1872. And she had asked Frederick Douglass, the famous abolitionist,
I hear he's doing great work.
I was just going to say that.
Yes.
Yes, our president seems to think he's doing well. I actually put that line in my solo show.
Oh, cool.
Got a big laugh.
Uh-huh.
But Victoria Woodhull did ask him, but she was extremely radical. And this was during the time that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were running for president. And so I just saw this parallel, and I really did not intend ever to write a play about women's history, but I literally went down a rabbit hole. And I'm really glad I did. I'm really glad I couldn't find a job in 2008 because of maternal profiling and ageism, because all of that's in the play and resonates so much with the audience and with what's going on in our world today. And I'll tell you, you know, Nicole, you've been, you know, I've been coming on with you since Cheerios in my underwear.
Yep. Yes, you have.
And I've been doing this work for so long, and I've been hearing forever, oh, it's the year of the woman. And I've always gotten great support, and people are always really into the play, both of the plays. But this year, with the Me Too movement and everything else that's going on in Trump, you know, sometimes there's a perfect storm, and there's a different energy. Especially, you know, I'm very much focusing in this production on Sunday night with, I have 10 actresses in the play. I'm actually in it this time, too. And I have a kick-ass young director named Samantha Shada, who is just on fire and brilliant. And it's a completely collaborative effort. And the play has always been sort of a magnet for fabulous females. I always say I'm a messenger. I have worked on it for years. I've never had trouble finding really talented women, female actors, to work on this play because, as I say in the play, and I've been talking about it for a long time, there are very few all-female plays that are produced. You know, a couple of years ago, the Dramatists Guild did a study. They studied all the theater productions that were done in America and that were written by women. And it was 22%.
Wow.
22% of plays on stage were written by women. So this play is written by a woman. It's all about women, you know, and it's directed by a woman. There are men in the play, but we play them. You know, back in Shakespeare's day, women weren't even allowed on the stage.
That's right.
So one of the reasons that it's so easy to get female actors to work on it is because there aren't a lot of parts for women on stage in theater or anywhere. The play is completely representative of our society, corporate America, everywhere. You know, we are not represented. So my whole goal is besides telling the stories of the women, is to get us on stage and get this piece into the schools. You know, the history books they have two pages on, you know, Seneca Falls, and for their listeners.
Right. And the
Seneca
only
Falls
women
is,
that we learn about are Eleanor Roosevelt, Susan B. Anthony, Betsy Ross, Clara Barton. I mean, I'm digging. You know, those are the names that we heard about in school, and you, Abigail Adams, if you're lucky,
right.
It is
getting better. I mean, it is getting better because I had workshopped some of this in my years ago. My daughters now are 21 and 25.
Wow.
But when my younger daughter was in eighth grade, she had a really cool teacher, Mr. Foldvery, and he was a fan of the work, and he was a feminist. He is a feminist. So I had brought the play in and workshopped it in his classroom, and I love to tell the story because I get into the classroom, and I get up in front of the classroom, and I say, okay, so I'm gonna do a little play for you, but I'm really not sure where I should stand because I don't know where you all can see me. So why don't we take a vote? But just the boys. and it was just, you know, they perked up. And again, you know, Women's Equality Day is all about the vote. And the 19th Amendment was passed, passed in 1919, but signed into law in 1919 and passed in 1920. And one of the reasons there's so much energy around women and women's history is because we're coming up on the 100th anniversary of the passage of the 19th Amendment.
Right, but I don't know. I don't know that people are consciously realizing that this is. I mean, it's at the polls. This is like the year of the women. There are more female candidates this year than ever mm-hmm. before. Congress is going to have a big culture shock change come January when the new Congress is sworn in, because there are going to be a lot more women there.
Yeah, I'm trying to find my at the end of the play on Sunday, I put together a movie with my co-partner Samantha Shada, and I've got Maxine Waters in there reclaiming her time, and I've got Elizabeth Warren, and I've got my favorite new heroine, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I've got her in there, and I've got a whole thing about how many women are running for office. It is a record number this year
yep.
of women running for office, and there's such a movement now to get our young people to vote. I think I saw something at the vaguely remember seeing something, the VMAs or the MTV Awards. They are working really hard on engaging youth and getting registering youth.
Good.
Like there really is a youth movement now. I think Parkland was part of it that
mm-hmm.
started it.
Yep.
You know. So yeah, there's just a ton of energy,
and a lot
of it is because
I think a lot of the women's enthusiasm is because of Trump, because he is such a sexist pig.
Yeah.
Because we can't believe that somebody who treats women in the misogynistic ways he has, that somebody with that type of character somehow got into the White House, and women are mortified. I mean, all you have to do is think back to the day after inauguration and the Women's March. I still get goosebumps when I think about that day.
And that's in my play as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And what's really interesting, again, back to the 19th Amendment and Women's Equality Day, you know, women marched in 1917. And I do a whole thing about Alice Paul. So for the listeners, again, Alice Paul was a suffragist who was really behind the passage of the 19th Amendment. Of course, she didn't do it on her own. It takes, you know, a lot of people to make something happen, but she really led that movement. And she was actually mentored in England by the famous suffragette. I think my mind actually just went blank. And she learned about militant protest, and they all would go into break windows and get arrested and go to jail and go on hunger strikes. And that won the women the right to vote in England. So Alice Paul tried it over here.
Hmm.
And President Wilson was coming to Washington for his inauguration parade. But the day before his parade, she had organized 8,000 women to march down Pennsylvania Avenue for the right to vote. She literally stole his parade. I mean, the guy gets off at Union Station expecting this big crowd, and there was no one there. He's like, where's everyone? Where's my parade? They're like, they're all in the avenue watching Alice Paul's suffrage parade.
Wow.
And so they marched that, you know, it was years of hard work to win the right to vote. And that day when they marched down, it was like 500,000 people watched the parade. It was the largest parade in history. I always say, imagine what Alice Paul could do with Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Just imagine the organizing, because she was amazing. But the women they paid a big price for that parade. They were mobbed. They had lit cigars thrown at them. They were, you know, pushed around, bullied, really. And the police, they just looked the other way. And then a few years later, we were in World War I, and they were protesting in front of the White House. They were called the Silent Sentinels. They stood out there for 18 months, not saying a word.
Wow.
For the right to vote. And, you know, Wilson was like, we're going to go fight for liberty in World War I. And Alice Paul was like, excuse me, what about the women? How long, Mr. President, must the women wait for liberty? So they held these signs outside the White House for 18 months. And finally, Wilson got pissed off. I think he was just pissed off about the parade. And they arrested the women on bogus charges of obstructing sidewalk traffic and threw them in jail.
Mm-hmm.
So Alice Paul, she goes on a hunger strike, you know. So I bring this whole story to life in the play. What's different about the full cast version of She, and I'm calling it She Is History, just to differentiate from the solo play,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, we are on stage, we're doing scenes. I mean, you are seeing these women live their lives. We're watching Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony work on the 14th Amendment. And the big thing about the 14th Amendment was that it was the first time our Constitution had the word male in it. And, you know, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony and Victoria Woodhull, the first woman to run for president, they had lobbied Congress for years saying, hey, women have the right to vote. It's in the Constitution. All citizens born or naturalized in the United States are citizens, and citizens have the right to vote. But if you put the word male in there, we're excluded. I mean, we had to make an amendment to free the slaves. And the women worked really hard on the 13th Amendment. They worked really hard and organized it. So during, you know, during the war. They were right there. And then the 14th Amendment comes along, and Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony are like, okay, you know, it's our turn to vote. And many of the men from the abolition movement and many of the women said, you know what, it's really not your turn yet. Let's get the freed black slaves, the men, black male slaves, the right to vote, and then we'll get to you. This split the women's movement for like 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the women, the Lucy Stones and the Grimke sisters, and you know, they said, okay, we'll wait. It, you know, because one of the leaders of the abolition movement, Wendell Phillips, who was a big supporter of the women, he said, it is the hour of the Negro. So this is a really good scene. To me, it's like almost the heart of the whole play because Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who was partners with Susan B. Anthony, the greatest partnership in women's history, they said, no, fuck that shit, basically. Mm-hmm. We want our rights. And so it split the movement and they fought really hard. And, you know, it took until 1920. This was 1868 or 1861, right after the Civil War, when they started lobbying for the right to vote. And they had to wait till 1920 because they couldn't come together on this. It has been such a battle, as Bella Abzug says, a battle for equality. And it was Bella Abzug that got Women's Equality Day to be a day that we actually celebrate. She's the one that had Congress pass, you know, this make this day a resolution. She introduced a resolution to Congress. You know, she was the whole force behind it. Now, the 19th Amendment also was called the Susan B. Anthony Amendment. And, you know, it's just like the torch gets passed. Alice Paul is, you know, very much part of the 19th Amendment. She's the one who wrote the Equal Rights Amendment.
Right.
And she wrote that in 1923. And she went to Seneca Falls in 1923 to celebrate. They had just won, you know, recently won the 19th Amendment. And that's when she introduced the Equal Rights Amendment, which I'm always nervous to bring up the Equal Rights Amendment to you, Nicole, because your head explodes.
It does.
But I want to tell you.
Because it's 2018 and we still don't have a fucking Equal Rights Amendment.
Yeah, I know. I don't actually want to say calm down to you because, you know, the reason we make any progress anywhere is because we don't calm down. But
that's right.
Apparently I knew it was going to come up. So I did a little research before our little chat today and we have one more state to go.
Yeah, I know.
We have one more state to
go.
We just got Illinois and Nevada.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're getting close. I mean, there's so much going on, so much positive. I know it's really hard, but, you know, in the play, She's History, this Sunday, August 26th, 7:30 at Theater West here in Los Angeles, I tell a lot of these stories. And one of them, Bella Abzug, who is a congresswoman from New York, just a ball-busting, mm-hmm. pioneering, trailblazing, big pain in the ass who got so much done, stood up to everybody and was just amazing role model. She was a labor lawyer. She started out as a labor lawyer, and she defended a lot of celebrities during the McCarthy era, which was very helpful to her later when she campaigned. And, you know, she had Barbara Streisand and Marlo Thomas and Shirley MacLaine and a lot of, you know, people with a platform to help get her elected.
Mm-hmm.
But when she was a very young lawyer, there was a situation in Jackson, Mississippi. Willie McGee was a black man accused of raping a white woman. It's basically the story of To Kill a Mockingbird, except this actually happened.
Right.
It was actually a consensual affair. Well, nobody in Jackson, Mississippi, he was arrested, and nobody would defend him. Well, they get a hold of Bella Abzug, right? This is like 1949.
Uh-huh.
And she's a young lawyer, so she goes down to Mississippi. And for 3 years, she works on this case. Now, during that time, she was pregnant, and she lost the baby.
Oh.
Now, it's hard to find the exact time when she lost it, but it was during that time because she was, you know, going down there. Her life was literally threatened. She had to sleep in a bus station. Nobody would rent her a room. I mean, they wanted her to be electrocuted in the electric chair. When I did the research on this, I was like, this is an unbelievable story that nobody knows. Well, it's in the play, and it is so powerful. And all of it is taken from her, you know, from it's all real. It's all from diaries or newspaper reports or personal letters. Like, most of the dialogue in the scenes are these women's words. You know, I pad them a little, but it's all from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything is true. And it's such a powerful story. And it's insanely relevant. I mean, I have Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech as a voiceover during her scene when she goes into the bus station. And so much of it is like, you look at it, you're like, wow, we're still here.
Uh-huh.
We're still here.
Yep.
I've got Sojourner Truth. You know, she was invited mm-hmm. to a women's rights convention in 1851 after Elizabeth Cady Stanton stood up in 1848 at Seneca Falls, the first women's rights convention, demanding the right to vote and many other things. And, you know, she started a whole trend, like all these women's rights conventions started popping up all over the country, thanks to, you know, Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Lucretia Mott and men and women who wanted to help women attain equality. So Sojourner Truth gets invited to this women's rights convention in Akron, Ohio. She gets invited by a very cool woman named Frances Gage, and they're in a church, and there are all these ministers and white men, and people are arguing about, you know, women's rights, should they or shouldn't they? And the ministers are like, well, why do women want women's rights? They have the best place everywhere. They're carried over mud puddles, and they're lifted into ditches, and, you know, the first woman God ever made, you know, was blah, blah, blah. And then Sojourner Truth, she's this big, tall, amazing, strong black woman, and she walks up the aisle. I mean, this is straight out of the history books, I must emphasize. Mm-hmm. But she does her iconic Ain't I a Woman speech. And, you know, I've been doing this in my solo play for many years, and it's very powerful on its own. But now I have a whole cast of mm-hmm. people that make this whole scene come alive. It's just amazing. Like, you could hear a pin drop when we rehearse. I can't wait to put it in front of an audience. I mean, there's just so much that's in the play that is so insanely relevant, and it's all true.
Wow.
And I have scenes from today. You know, I have a scene about motherhood and maternal profiling, and the story of She Is History is about a mother basically trying to enlighten her children who think it's okay to do their women's history report on Kim Kardashian
mm-hmm.
or Cher or Janet
right.
Jackson. So, yeah, so it's, you know, we watch her journey through the play, and we meet all these women from the past who inspire her. You know, their lives are parallel. They're, you know, they're all struggling to find equal rights while they're taking care of their families and cooking dinner and corralling the kids and dealing with the husbands and, you know, being marginalized and shut out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Victoria Woodhull stepping out and making her big speech, and she's announcing herself for president. And it's just, there's so much that is so relevant. And it's thrilling. It's a very thrilling process. I've been workshopping it at Theater West. We have a writer's workshop. And I was a member. I joined there 4 years ago, and I thought, mm-hmm. oh, I'll just bring my solo play and turn it into a full cast play.
Right, right.
Well, it's not that easy.
So tell us, for those who are in the Los Angeles area, and I know there are a lot of people listening in L.A., the show is being staged. It's just one performance only. It's this Sunday night at 7:30.
It is one performance only. It's also a benefit for our theater. You know, it's very hard to keep theaters going
mm-hmm.
in our country. And Theater West happens to be the oldest operating theater in Los Angeles.
Wow.
It is a beautiful theater, but we struggle all the time, like many theaters here, to keep the lights on and pay the rent. So it is a benefit. I'm doing it the one night. I have every intention of doing it again, like maybe in March for Women's History Month.
Mm-hmm.
But my goal right now is to get the work we've all done on the script to make this accessible and workable and performable, get it on the stage. The audience is going to let us know on Sunday night if it's ready to get, you know, to be put out there. I'm hoping to get it published.
Uh-huh.
So it's Sunday, August 26th, 7:30 p.m., Theater West. There are $10 tickets on Gold Star. It's $20 at the door. Just go to sheshistory.com. All the information is there. Or, you know, you could probably just Google She's History Los Angeles and, you know, it'll pop up and you can
right.
get to my website.
And I'll put all the info on my blog at NicoleSandler.com should people, you know, forget all this. And you can always go there. But it's sheshistory.com. It's very
mm-hmm.
easy. And, yeah, this Sunday night at 7:30, I so wish I could be there.
I know. You know, I am going to try to film it, and it's really hard to get a sense of what it's like to be in the theater on film. But if I get something decent, doll, I'll send it to you.
Okay.
She's History is not going away.
Right.
You know, I'm not leaving the earth until it's out there.
That sounds good. And hopefully you'll have another, like a success chapter to add after November 6th, because I think there's, you know, not only is there going to be a blue wave, but there's going to be a female, a pink wave.
They're calling it a pink wave. Yeah,
they're
calling it a pink wave.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fantastic how many women are running. That's the deal. That's the only, that's the whole thing.
All right. Amy Simon, sheshistory.com, this Sunday in Los Angeles. And it's great for kids, too, right?
Kids are free. Thank you for bringing that up. I wrote this for kids.
Right.
For, you know, I say middle school and up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Children, 10 to 18 years old, free. Free,
wow.
free, free.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
I was just complaining to somebody that there's down here, there's like nothing to do. In L.A., there's so much to do. So this sounds like a wonderful thing to do. Take your kid, take your mother, take your husband, because, you know, men can appreciate all that we women, our foremothers, have done for us. Because again, we don't learn so many of these stories in school. And it's entertaining too. It's not just informative, but it's entertaining.
Yes, and there'll be cookies and wine.
Ah, what more could you want? Cookies and wine and Cheese History. Amy Simon, thank you so much. You can find Amy on Twitter sometimes at Cheese History Amy. again, visit cheesehistory.com for ticket information and more information about the show. Thank you so much, honey. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, same here. Thank you. And keep getting pissed off.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's a problem.
I don't either.
All right. Thank you, Amy. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye-bye. Bye. There's Amy Simon. I miss her. Yeah. Again, if I was out in L.A., that's where I'd be this Sunday. So go see the show. I want to get reviews from listeners. All right? And that's it for us for the week. So go out and have a weekend and enjoy yourself. And I'll see you back here on Tuesday. Thanks for listening, everyone.